All right, Dan Pink is back on the show with me today. Dan has written 7 books, including Drive and To Sell Is Human and A Whole New Mind. He was on with me about 3 years ago to promote a TV series he did called Crowd Control, which I was disappointed when it didn't get picked up for a longer run. Now he's back with a new book called When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. He's going to be in St. Louis next Wednesday to do a book signing and talk about the book at the St. Louis County Library headquarters branch. And he's here today. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Good to be back.
You know the irony of us trying to connect with you and missing you when your book is all about timing.
Indeed, although I should have wrote a book about dodgy phone lines in hotels, although I'm not sure that would be a big seller. That could get canceled as fast as my TV series.
Yeah, when we had to call through the hotel operator, I actually thought to myself, this is trouble. Nobody pays. When I go into a hotel room, I unplug the hotel phone because I have a phone.
Exactly. I think the hotel phone is a relic. It will quickly be displaced by those self-propelled suitcases.
Probably, yeah. And then the other question I've got to ask you is, did you consult with scientists to find out if this is the correct time to publish your book?
Interesting you say that. We actually did factor in timing in publishing this book, figuring that the second week of the year, get the new year, but not on the crush of diet books. What we didn't anticipate is having another nonfiction book coming out the same week that the White House tried to shut down.
Yeah. You can't get President Trump to denounce you in your book to boost sales?
I've tried for years to have Donald Trump denounce me, but to no avail.
Now, let's take a step back here. Are there actually scientists who are studying timing?
Oh my gosh, there are many, many of them across many fields. So you have different aspects of time. So you have people who, like chronobiologists, who study the science of our daily rhythms. But then you have anthropologists, economists, social psychologists, cognitive scientists, sociologists, endocrinologists, anesthesiologists, who are doing some really interesting research about the when decisions we make in our life, finding that when we do stuff has a huge effect on how well we do, how much we learn, what happens to our health, even what happens in the course of our life. So there's some incredible research out there.
Now, one of the wins in the book that interests me is if you're going to go in for surgery, whether emergency or elective, you should try to have that surgery done first thing in the morning. Why?
Oh, my Lord. Well, you shouldn't have it. You shouldn't have, if it's emergency surgery, just get it done.
Yes.
But if you have a say, don't go in general, if you have a say, do not go into a hospital or go to an important doctor's appointment in the afternoon. There's some alarming data from a whole range of different sources that show, among several things. One, anesthesia errors are 4 times more likely at 3 p.m. than at 9 a.m. Endoscopists in doing colonoscopies find 1/2 as many polyps in afternoon exams as they do in morning exams with the same population.
Wow.
Nurses far less likely in hospitals to wash their hands in the afternoon than in the morning. Doctors much more likely to prescribe unnecessary antibiotics in the afternoon. Over and over it goes. Personally, I don't let anybody in my family do an important medical appointment or go to the hospital in the afternoon.
I think one important lesson we've learned here is the only thing better in the afternoon is radio. Well, at least this show.
Exactly. They should be home listening to the Paul, or anywhere in their car, listening to the Paul Harris show.
Yeah, thank you for the plug. I read another article this week that says that there are more and more school districts who are finally saying, okay, we'll start high school later in the day. What's the research on that?
Oh, the research on that, Paul, is overwhelming. Just to give a quick background on the science, people have different what are called chronotypes, sort of when they wake up in the morning, when they go to sleep, and we human beings undergo a significant change between about the ages of 14 and 24. We become much more owly, much more like night owls, much more toward later chronotypes. And it's so bad that the American Academy of Pediatricians, and I want you to think about, that's a little bit of a bloodless name, so think of all of America's pediatricians linking arms, issuing a policy statement saying to America's school districts, please, 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 do not start school for teenagers before 8:30 in the morning. What you see is higher incidences of depression, The Centers for Disease Control has research on this. Higher incidence of depression, more obesity, more teen accidents, lower academic performance, more dropouts, lower standardized test scores. It's really incredible. So a couple years ago, the Pediatricians of America said, you know, stop the madness. And yet, the average school start time for teenagers in America is 8:03. So we're not quite there. But the districts that have done this are reversing basically all of those trends. Less depression, less obesity, higher graduation rates, higher scores, fewer traffic accidents. And it also turns out to be one of the most cost-effective things that school districts can do to improve education outcomes.
Very interesting. But don't the kids just stay up later and get the same amount of sleep?
Not necessarily. You know, what's happening right now is that they're staying up late and getting up too early. I mean, I don't, you know, when people fall asleep is largely subject to their biological rhythms. And the fact of the matter with teenagers, and listen, I got a 15-year-old son, all right?
Yep.
So I'm seeing this change in chronotype take place before my eyes. And they're just, people that age just don't fall asleep that, you know, as early as we want them to fall asleep. So if you give them just another hour of sleep at the back end of that, it can make a world of difference. And you know, these later starting times you're talking about, we're not starting, you know, school at 2 in the afternoon. We're talking about moving it to like 9 or 9:15. And even that small increment, 45 minutes, an hour later, makes a huge difference. To me, this is like as much of a no-brainer as anything in the book.
Is part of that because now not only do they get to sleep a little bit later, but they also get a chance to have breakfast without having to rush out at the last minute to get on the bus or to get in their friend's car and get to school? And is it true, as we've always heard our entire lives, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day?
You know what? I'd much rather have my son get an extra hour of sleep than insist that he eats breakfast. You know, I believe it or not, I write about the research on breakfast. And the question, the science on whether you should eat breakfast is a definitive maybe. A lot of the research on the importance of breakfast, I don't want to have a series of clicks across St. Louis as people turn it off your show while I'm talking about methodology, but they're what are called observational studies. So what they see is healthy people eat breakfast, and therefore, if healthy people are eating breakfast, you can't assume that the breakfast is causing them to be healthy. It just could be that healthy people happen to eat breakfast.
Yeah.
And what's worse is that some of these studies are funded by cereal companies. So there isn't evidence saying breakfast is a waste, it's harmful, not at all. But it's not nearly as robust as that slogan would have you believe. What is interesting is there's a new research showing that lunch is more important than we think. That lunch and breaks, especially in the afternoon, have enormous restorative power. And in fact, some of the parade of horrors on healthcare that I mentioned earlier, one way that hospitals and medical offices have mitigated that is through more and better breaks.
Giving somebody 10, 15, 20 minutes in the right around this time of the day?
That's all it takes in many cases. And we know certain kinds of breaks are more valuable. So I'll give you an example of that study of nurses and the drop in hand washing in the afternoon. What helped arrest that was simply giving the nurses more breaks, in particular social breaks. What we know about breaks is that, first of all, we don't take them seriously enough. But there's certain kinds. We know the design principles, at least, of breaks. Social is better than solo, so you're better off doing with someone if you can choose that person, even for introverts. We know that walking, moving is better than being stationary. It's amazing research on being in nature as a restorative. And we know that being fully detached, not having your phone, your nose in your Instagram feed while you're taking your break, is better than being semi-detached. So even something as simple as, you know, take a 15-minute walk break twice in the afternoon with someone you like, talking about something other than work, that can have a huge effect on mitigating some of this big drop we experience in the afternoon.
Certainly better for you than the smoke break. Now, I have to ask you one other thing from the book before we go here, Dan, because I flipped to this page and I said, oh, I got to get Dan to talk about this. And it means I get to ask you a question I've never asked another guest in my life.
Oh, I can't wait.
What is a dabawala?
A dabawala. Okay, this is actually really cool. In India, particularly in Mumbai, India, These are guys who deliver, pick up lunches that are homemade at people's apartments. So they're people's spouses, or, you know, in some parts of India, even middle class, upper middle class people have cooks. They will, these men will pick up these lunches, home cooked lunches, arrayed in what are called tiffin, these metal containers, pick them up at people's apartments, and then deliver them to their loved ones 20 miles away in downtown Mumbai, deliver them to their desk, and then come back later, pick up the empties, and then re-deliver these containers back to people's houses. They make 200,000 deliveries every single day.
Wow.
Without error, and not using any technology. They're not using GPS. They're not using UPC codes. Their error rate is so low that FedEx and UPS have gone out to study them. There's a Harvard Business School case study about these fellows. And, you know, I write about it because they are so expert at synchronizing with other people. One of the things that we do is we move in time with other people. How do we do that effectively? And these guys are just extraordinary at how they do that.
To read the whole story about that and many other things, pick up Dan Pink's book, When: The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. He'll be in St. Louis talking about it next Wednesday, the 17th, at the St. Louis County Library headquarters branch. And Dan, my brother Seth sends his best to you.
I'm a big fan of both Harris brothers. I always have been.
Thank you. It's a pleasure having you back on the show today. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.